Jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
And this is the Hagman and Hagman Report for today. It is Monday, January 25th, 2016. We're coming to you live from our radio and television studios here in beautiful Northwest Pennsylvania. Actually, cold, blustery, windy, snow. Yeah, you know what it's like, especially those of you on the East Coast. Global Star Radio Network is beaming far and wide and powerful. Not going to be deterred by the snow. Not intimidated by 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 feet of snow. Anyway, folks, we broadcast live each and every weeknight via the Global Star Radio Network. It's Monday through Friday, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And, of course, we're simulcast on Blog Talk, and also you can watch us as well on our YouTube channel there. Just go to HagmanandHagman.com, click on the link to the YouTube channel, or just watch it right on the website. It's right there. All broadcasting venues, however, can be found at our home base on the Internet at HagmanandHagman.com. For those who don't know, I'm Doug Hagman, at the helm with fellow investigator researcher and of course my son Joe Hagman. Together we are the Hagman and Hagman Report, what I like to call America's premier father-son reporting team. We dig deep into topics that the captured Illuminati-controlled mass media won't, don't, never will, and we're glad to do so. And you know, many people hear the coincidence theory of news. Well, we don't. We look into the conspiratorial aspect, and we find it everywhere we look. Well, not everywhere. No, we don't have aluminum foil wrapped on our heads, but, you know, it's hard to argue that we are seeing some things play out, of course, that are indeed conspiratorial. Folks, portions of the nice broadcast brought to you, really proud to announce, brought to you by Nuts.com. If you haven't gone to Nuts.com, have you gone to Nuts.com? My goodness, what a great website, nuts.com. I get hungry just thinking about it and going there, and you can spend a lot of time there if you'd like. Folks, go to nuts.com, enter our microphone code HH, that's HH in the microphone code box, and there you'll find just a fantastic, and I mean a fantastic, array of nuts and snacks to choose from. Again, nuts.com, microphone code HH. As well, you know, how about this, folks? How about this? How about Heaven's Harvest? Never heard of it, you asked?
It's a new sponsor.
Yeah.
That we have.
Yeah. Well, Heaven's Harvest is, wow. You know, you look at agriterrorism in the USA. Is it possible, for example? Oh, more on this later, but, if you go to HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link to Heaven's Harvest, or better yet, you know what they did? This is really interesting. And again, we're talking about long-term storable seeds. And if you go to HagmanSeeds.com, that's HagmanSeeds.com, HagmanSeeds.com, bang, it'll take you directly to Heaven's Harvest. What a great company as well. So anyway, it'll be a great show for you planned for tonight, folks.
Yeah, we do. We got two guests that will be joining us tonight. Our first guest will come in hour number two. His name is Bill Warner. His website is politicalislam.com. He is the author of several books. Some of you might have heard of them before: The Political Transitions of Muhammad, The Islamic Doctrine of Slavery, Muhammad and the Unbelievers, and Sharia Law for Non-Muslims. He's made over 90 videos on YouTube, and his YouTube channel is politicalislam.com. He's been a businessman and a professor and author. He has the director for the Center of Study of Political Islam and the first person to take the scientific method to produce the first Quran that can be read and easily understood. He'll be joining us in hour two, and we'll be talking about a number of things concerning Islam.
It's necessary to understand, right?
ISIS and the things we see today. Absolutely. With the Arab Spring going on. And also, Katie from Essential Oils will be our guest in hour number three.
And it's not going to be about essential oils, folks. It's going to be something very important. Very important to disclose tonight. You're going to want to stay for hour three. Just going to make an announcement tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know that's as far as we'll go. You know, before we get the show started, I came across some information over the weekend. I've been doing a lot of research, and you know, we talk about the war on drugs. We talk about the war on poverty. We talk about the war on terror. Well, folks, how successful have all of these wars been? I mean, really, when you look at it. Let me take you back to 1964. Remember the war on poverty? Do you remember the war on poverty, 1964? You don't.
Oh, I remember it well.
Yeah. No, well, you have to, I mean, look. Lyndon Johnson.
I mean, there's a generation of people out there. I'm 32 years old, be 33 this year. I don't remember I remember a little bit about the war on drugs because, you know, in elementary school, you'd have a firefighter or a police officer come to your class and they'd give you one of those DARE stickers.
Right. And, about as useful as, not as useful as duct tape, but, you know. Well, here's a little bit of trivia that I came across. And I just thought this was interesting. We've spoken about the counterculture. We've spoken about how the music and all of this, and we spoke about the Manson murders in the context of satanic sacrifice and counterculture and all of that. Charles Manson in the past, and Peter LaVenda wrote a series of books, Sinister Forces. It's a trilogy, and when I was looking for some information, I knew it was in one of his three books and that specific series. So I went to our library and pulled down the books, and I was looking through trying to find this one piece of information unrelated to what I'm about to tell you, but I thought this was interesting. And as soon as I read it, I recalled it. I thought, man, I got to make sure I share this with you. Well, if you think our government, for example, is capable of running anything or doing anything, well, think about this. There's a town. It's an Appalachian town. You know how poor Appalachia is, in the Kentucky, West Virginia, all through the Appalachians. Okay, well, back in 1964, then President Lyndon Johnson, he stood, and you might be able to find this in magazines or news clips. He stood in front of this old ramshackled house in this Appalachian town of Inez, Kentucky, which is about 50 miles south of Ashland, where he announced that the government was launching the war on poverty. Again, he did so outside a small shack in the hollow to the backbeat of television crews and print reporters. That was in 1964. 28 years later, 1992, writes LaVenda, the shack would, 28 years later, in 1992, that particular house was still standing, okay, and its once famous inhabitant, Tommy Fletcher, still lived there. Think about that for a second. 64, we're going to...
So they used this house as the backdrop of launching the war on poverty.
Right. But it takes an even more interesting and ominous and sinister, if I may, twist. The guy that lived there, again, Tommy Fletcher, well, still lived there, but television crews returned, only this time they would return to report that he and his current wife had been indicted for having children and then killing them off one by one for the insurance money. Okay? For having children and then killing them off one by one for the insurance money. The body of their daughter at that time, little 3-year-old Ella Rose Fletcher, had been exhumed, and the authorities did an autopsy, and they found that she died of an overdose of antidepressant medication, and worse than that, well, equally bad, of course, she was sexually molested. Her 4-year-old brother, Tommy Fletcher Jr., he was hospitalized a month later after his sister's death, showing the same symptoms of drug poisoning. And you know, there was a $5,000 insurance policy on both of the children. What do you think now about this war on poverty. Hey, you Marxist progressives that think you can throw money at a problem, you know, do you think that you can declare war on poverty? What do you think now? Tommy Fletcher is exhibit A that you lost, we lost the war on poverty. Now, again, 64, big production, Lyndon Johnson, LBJ, right in front of this shack, Tommy Fletcher. We're gonna save you. We're coming to your rescue. Think about that for a second.
Well, it's just like the educational system. When you look at the amount of funding and money that has gone into the educational system to see each generation of children become dumber and dumber, you have to start to wonder how much is throwing money at the problem actually fixing or helping the problem, or is it continuing or spreading it? I mean, the educational system is different from the war on poverty in a way, but it's an example of how throwing money at the problem is not always the answer.
If we make it to the election, and I say that if, because there's a lot of news, folks. I did from my office. I did a video today, earlier today. If you want to check it out, it's on YouTube. I think it's accessible via Northeast Intelligence.
Hey, guys,
you go to HomelandSecurityUS.com.
Yeah, HomelandSecurityUS.com, the site we had when we started, that you started after 9/11.
Yep.
Has been up, but it's back up and running.
With a scary, kind of a scary face, actually. You can always thanks, Eric. Eric just put it up. You can always just cut off that top banner and put a blue dot over the face there. I know it's pretty rough, but I was actually at the doctor's today and for dumb stuff, and the doctor said, "Do you mind if a med student comes in and, you know, hangs out and watches? You know, I'm training her." And I said, "Look, I don't care. You know, just don't fall in love, honey." No, I'm kidding. I did say that to her, you know, and she gave me this really, like, you know, weird look. But, you know, I said, "Man, you know, I'm hideous. Look away. Look away." So feel free. Look away. Anyway, the message is important because, and maybe we can start off there with respect to the news today. You know, folks, last Wednesday, and I don't know how many people caught this, and we were kind of watching this, and we thought, well, you know, at first I thought this was just nothing more than a reiteration of the Patriot or NDAA, that is, given the time of the year, the Senate joint resolution that was that's being tossed around.
Yeah,
you know,
we talked about this last Friday.
Right, we did. I know we did, but not in the depth that really we should have. Folks, what Harry Reid is doing, I don't know, and none of the mainstream media is. Go ahead.
I'm going to send this video to Eric. Eric, if you it's a 1-minute, 10-second video clip of a senator warning about what is in this bill. And I guess we don't have to play the video.
Just go ahead, and if you can just paraphrase it. The reason I'm saying that is because of some technical issues here, but it's up to you.
Well, this resolution is a new authorization for military force declaring war on ISIS as the excuse, but it is apparently implemented worldwide. It gives the president unprecedented war powers that amount to declaring martial law upon the entire world. Majority Leader Mitch McConnell surprised everybody last week.
I'm sorry, Mitch McConnell, not Harry Reid. What am I saying? Mitch McConnell.
Yes, saying that the was a war resolution ready to be voted on at any time. This was right before the blizzard, as Washington, D.C. was getting ready for that big snowstorm this weekend. But this new authorization of use for military force is used, as they say, for declaring war on ISIS. But it gives the president even more powers than they had after the Patriot Act and 9/11 and even the NDAA. It continues the war powers resolution, which we have been basically governed under since the 30s.
That's right. And this is, people better pay attention to this. People better pay attention to this because this is not necessarily just about ISIS, all right? Because when you start, you're given the authority to assign the military anywhere geographically across the world, especially domestically.
When has the Congress get the power to vote on, you know, what they can do across the world? I thought they're, we're limited to the continental United States or the United States as a country. How can you legislate something
This has got nothing to do with Congress. What Congress is doing essentially is ceding authority, just like the TPA they did with the fast track authority. They're fast tracking this approval to allow Obama to go anywhere mm-hmm. to send the military anywhere. If that means downtown Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, it's okay. Because Obama has that authority. Now, this is what Congress is ceding their authority. So we don't have a legislative branch anymore. We have an executive branch only. And when that happens, what are we left with? We're left with an executive branch. We're left with fascist tyranny. I mean, I don't care how you dress it up, whether you want to put lipstick on this pig or not, it doesn't matter. And I'm sorry for saying that because that's an overused expression, but no, I mean, you know what? You've got a Hitlerian or a Mussolini type, environment here. And I don't care if it's a Republican, Democrat, Independent, Martian, blue headed, reptilian, and I don't care what it is in the White House.
Understand that this is another encroachment on a series of encroachments by the government to take away constitutional freedoms. The only thing different from this one is the powers to declare martial law anywhere internationally.
Right. Well, and to deploy that, yes. I think
a Democrat from Connecticut. Senator Chris Murphy said it is essentially a declaration of international martial law, a sweeping transfer of military power to the president that will allow him or her to send U.S. troops almost anywhere in the world for any reason with absolutely no limitations.
Mm-hmm.
That from a sitting senator.
Mm-hmm.
And the resolution he starts out by saying is a total rewrite of the War Powers Clause in the United States Constitution.
Right. Well, there you have it.
Another senator, Tim Kaine, said, I believe that the war is illegal. I don't think there's legal justification for it, and I think the greatest danger we end up doing is allowing the president to wage war without Congress weighing in. And we've talked about that since our show's been on air, the power of waging war.
But see, I'm looking at this a little bit differently. All right. Now this, and I mentioned this in the YouTube video, because all of a sudden people are coming out, and you might say, hey, you guys are late to the game for talking about this. This happened last Wednesday, and here it is Monday, and there's 20 YouTube, Alex Jones and others, and I'm glad he did it, but other people out there talking about this. But I think people are missing the whole idea. I think people are not seeing the bigger picture. When you look at what is taking place with the economy, the Baltic Dry Index, the fact that there's very few commodities moving, and all commodities from oil to soybeans to grain, I mean, it's down. Everything is down. We are heading into a type of an event that will rival 2008 and 1929 combined, economically speaking. So I do believe this is allowing ahead of time Obama's selective use of the military in cities in the United States domestically, because don't forget Lindsey Graham, who's also a co-sponsor of this bill, had declared all of the homeland
a battlefield.
Right. But I believe the impetus behind this is going to be, or is not, ISIS. But the impetus will be civil unrest stemming from the economic factors, as talked about, and as predicted in The Economist 2016 edition of The Economist. Now, again, more on this later. I just found some additional things in here that I think are relevant to today. But bottom line, folks, is you prepare, because we are. So the video that was done, just wanted to be clear about this. The video that was done was not done saying, hey, look, they're going to declare martial law. Obama's going to declare martial law. That's not what I'm talking about. I think the important fact here is we have to look at the bigger picture and see what chess pieces are being moved. I believe that this is going to be important for stuff overseas, including Syria. Okay, I think that at the root of this overseas is Syria, but the domestic component here is equally important. However, I don't believe Obama is going to give America over to the military, only because that would take away his police powers. And so when you say martial law, I don't believe that'll be effective martial law here in the United States. I believe it'll be under DHS, which will be a police action as opposed to a martial law. That's just my view. Video is on, if you go to HomelandSecurityUS.com, that's HomelandSecurityUS.com, you can see my 2 cents, and for what it's worth, it might not even be worth 2 cents, but there it is, and that's HomelandSecurityUS.com.
Another way of looking at this also, from hearing different news reports and listening to a few people, I haven't heard anybody really come right out and say this, but just like presidents before, we saw George Bush, as we stated, implement the Patriot Act, and we saw President Obama implement the NDAA, taking away civilian...
Man, we got to break you of that habit.
What?
President Obama.
Taking away the civilian rights of any citizen of the United States and their constitutional rights, separating them from... calling them, you know, belligerent citizens or under national security can disappear you without a lawyer, trial, or charges being brought against you. This is another, as I said, encroachment of the War Powers Resolution that could be left for the next president, whoever it be, whether it be Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. But under this theory, I'd speculate it would be a Republican president. They would implement all these laws and get everything ready, and then have an enemy in the office who they consider an enemy as an establishment when they bring the whole thing down to blame it on.
Mm.
And that's a very real possibility.
Indeed. Indeed it is. You know, this all goes back to what I believe. I mean, when I'm looking at things and folks, you know, you're looking at things. I think it's very interesting, too, how well, there's an article on the Intel Hub. I'm not sure. This is last week. Yeah, Obama exposes White House Salter, foreign CIA operative puppet with falsified credentials. You think? Anyway, CIA assaults White House, installs every president since Kennedy. In other words, what this report on Intel Hub is saying, and I do believe this to be the case, and that's IntelHub.com, written by Shepard Embellis is the author. IntelHub.com is the website, and January 18th is the date. But Shepard writes this: a new bombshell report written by Jerome Corsi suggests that Barack H. Obama's passport records were likely sanitized by the acting director of CIA, John Brennan. Now, remember this, okay, because I think that this all leads up. I think if you look at this, Joe, what we're seeing is this one big crime scene. And ladies and gentlemen, this is a crime scene. Go back to 2008 when Obama was on the campaign trail and he had John Brennan's companies and related, both his company as well as another company that were acting as security consultant companies. Brennan was the head of one. There was a break-in in the passport records office. Affected were Hillary Clinton and Obama's passport records. Obama, Barry Satoru, was out there on the campaign trail. Didn't learn of it, I believe, until it was March or April. And only because of that were his exploits to Pakistan, trips to Pakistan, revealed. Remember that? We may have never known about that Pakistan trip when we did, had that passport break-in not been, had that reporter not said, hey, Obama, or Barry, or, you know, Mr. Choom, did you know this happened? And then, of course, he had to respond, that no, you know, and then of course he admitted that he traveled to Pakistan. Otherwise, we'd have never known of that. But anyway, the bottom line here, Joe, is this: the Barry Satoru, I believe, as this author believes, is a foreign entity, and I believe that, and I do believe this. I believe that the criminal cabal within the CIA. Now, that's not to say the CIA itself. I believe the criminal cabal within the CIA, because I do believe that there are people, men, women out there, and I've met some within the CIA who are honorable people and are God-fearing, God-loving people. Don't paint with such a broad brush. There are people in the CIA who believe that they are helping the United States and helping to advance a godlike agenda. I mean, not that religion has, or their spiritual faith has anything to do with it, but what I'm saying is they believe they're conducting honorable business. And I'm not talking about the mercenaries. I'm not talking about the the people that go over and, you know, overthrow countries and dictators and stuff like that, or fly in drugs. No, I'm talking about the people who are working to protect the country outside of the country as dictated by law. But anyway, so this to me, intelhub.com, the article by Shepard and Bellis is worth the read, dated January 18th of 2016. So anyway, so it's a criminal cabal, really, and Obama and every other president, not that Obama was truly elected, but every other man in the Oval Office subsequent to Kennedy was selected first, and even he was selected, but that's another story.
We have a few updates on continuing stories we've been talking about. One, the Hillary Clinton FBI scandal. Two, the Planned Parenthood Center for Medical Progress videos today as a Harris County grand jury investigating allegations that Planned Parenthood Clinic in Houston illegally sold tissues of aborted fetuses had cleared the organization of wrongdoing and instead indicted two anti-abortion activists behind the undercover videos that sparked a probe. Secret videographers David Daliadin and Sandra Merritt were both indicted on charges of tampering with a government record on a second-degree felony carrying a punishment of 20 years in prison. David received an additional misdemeanor indictment under the law prohibiting the purchase and sale of human organs. Harris County District Attorney Mr. Devon Anderson announced the surprising indictments Monday after a two-month investigation. "We were called upon to investigate allegations of criminal conduct by Planned Parenthood Gulf Coast," said Anderson. "As a Republican, I stated at the outset of this investigation, we must go where the evidence leads us. All the evidence uncovered in the course of this investigation was presented to a grand jury, and I respect their decision on this difficult case." They say in this article from the local paper that the probe began after the Center for Medical Progress, an anti-abortion group run by David, released the footage of a Houston clinic as part of the series of videos showing Planned Parenthood officials casually discussing the methods and cost of preserving fetal tissue for scientific research that prompted the allegations that the organization was profiting off tissue, which is a crime. An allegation that was never proven, they say here in the article. And sparked calls for an investigation
because
Governor Abbott and Attorney General Ken Paxton.
Well, how about this, ladies and gentlemen? How about this? The Planned Parenthood board member works in the office of the district attorney investigating the sale of aborted fetuses, aborted babies. So here's the deal.
Is there a name in that one?
Yeah, and hold on.
Okay.
Now think of this, okay? Because as an investigator myself for 30 years, do you think that I could get away with something like this? You got to be kidding me. LifeNews.com, that's LifeNews.com. According to a report there, one of the prosecutors in the Houston District Attorney's Office is a board member of the very same Planned Parenthood, which was targeted by the Center for Medical Progress. I shouldn't say targeted, which exposed that Planned Parenthood, the Center for Medical Progress, exposed the illegal activities in that location. Now, if you dig deep enough, and you got to research this, because this is not just a simple thing. You've got to dig down, and you will find evidence. In fact, earlier today, I had dragged some postings from some, dare I say this? Well, I already got them, so it doesn't really matter. When you have the comment section on websites, when you start looking down and start drilling down into the comment sections on websites, you might find some gold there. Well, you can even find mention that the DA herself, Devon Anderson, had made it appeared. Now, I'm not saying this, I can't authenticate the postings, but it seems like either she or people acting on her behalf attempted to sway the argument in a public forum. Okay, I guess what I'm saying to you is, this is not as cut and dry as you might think it is. And you know what? And this is one more thing. I'm just really fired up. I got to tell you something. Okay, I really admire Coach Dave Dobmeier, PTSalt.com, because he's out there in the trenches every day, every day at an abortion clinic. Do you realize that he changed the mind of well over four dozen women, he and his team, from getting abortions? He saved 50 some lives. I've got the stats in there. He might tell you that, but he'll never boast about it. But see, he's out there changing the hearts and minds of people. Now, Coach Dave Dobmeier is America's coach. Just as Pastor Langford is our coach here, or our pastor, we consider him our pastor, I would consider Coach Dave Dobmeier our coach and America's coach. Only because he's out there kicking butts, taking names, and doing it in the name of God with godlike, you know, principles. So I just want to say this to me is really where the battle rages. And Coach Dobmeier has assembled a great team, and we need to help him out. PTSalt.com. Salt and Light Brigade. Just go to ptsalt.com. Send him an email and make sure you give him some words of encouragement. Support him. Do everything you can. But he's like 100%, man. This guy's out there and doing more than I could ever think of doing. And I mean, between Joe and I, I'm serious, man. He's out there.
No,
so,
he does yeah. a whole heck of a lot.
I want to make sure I threw that in there because he's really making a difference. But now back to the Center for Medical Progress. Go ahead, Joe, and take it, man. Just go ahead and take it.
All right. Again, two people, Sandra Merritt and David Deledian, both were indicted for criminal probes against Planned Parenthood after a Harris County grand jury said that Planned Parenthood basically was found not guilty of selling tissue of aborted fetuses. They were cleared of any wrongdoing, and instead these two, David Deledian and Sarah Merritt, both for Center of Medical Progress, were indicted on criminal charges of tampering with governmental record, a second-degree felony that punishes up to 20 years in prison. The Texas Health and Human Service Commissions are still investigating the video. The governor said nothing about today's announcement in Harris County impacts the state's ongoing investigation. Texas will continue to protect life, and I will continue to support legislation prohibiting the sale or transfer of fetal tissue. That from Governor Abbott's office. And a spokesman for the Houston branch of Planned Parenthood said the news made the organization feel vindicated. They say it's great news because it demonstrates that they have from the very beginning, which is that Planned Parenthood is following every rule and regulation. We're glad that these extremists have been indicted for breaking the law, they say. The National Organization of Planned Parenthood said in a letter to Congress that David was involved secretly in recording staff and patients at least 65 times over the last 8 years. The organization alleged that Mr. David Deledian and others used aliases, obtained fake government IDs, and formed fake tissue procurement company in effort to gain access to private areas and record conversations
and
deceptively edited to create false impression.
All right. So very simply, tampering with government records is a felony. That's what they were charged with. And of course, it stems from exactly what Joe, what you just referenced. Really? Okay. Now,
I mean, this is just, guess what can you expect from, such an upside down country?
It's lawless. But see,
it is.
The police, okay, law enforcement, in cases like this, and we've run into cases like this, it's called permissible pretext. All right. I'm not going to get into the entire permissible pretext doctrine of permissible pretext, but the bottom line is this. If you, let's say you know a guy who owns a pizza shop, and I'm just trying to think of a good way to, well, you know what, I don't even have to explain it. The fact of the matter is Planned Parenthood is engaged in the trafficking, and I based on everything the Center for Medical Progress said, in my opinion, my professional research, they're engaged in trafficking in
oh, they
in
are
body parts.
And that's been proven,
right?
And it's like Planned Parenthood got caught with their hand in the cookie jar, and the people who caught them are being indicted instead of them.
Right.
It's very backwards and upside down, and very unnerving too. And you see that they can do this with people who were just trying to find the truth of a matter, especially when dealing with staggering numbers of over 3,000 aborted babies a day.
4,000.
4,000.
Yeah.
This is no small matter. No, nothing to take lightly. And the policy of Planned Parenthood has changed since the videos have been released, which some when they changed him, said that was a basically an admittance of guilt. And it's not an accusation, even though they were cleared by the Harris County grand jury. It doesn't matter. They've been caught in the act. So this is just, again, they're trying to rewrite history. They're trying to tell us that abortion is good and it's a woman's health right, and that we have to accept it. And if you fight against it, well, you could go to jail. And that just needs to be made clear, because that's the truth. And that's what's going to happen and continue to happen.
I got to tell you, you know, it tells me the state of the legal system in this country. Loretta Lynch mob. God bless you, Steve Quayle. Loretta Lynch mob. I mean, I couldn't think of a better name for her. But to me, this is a sad day when you have, and don't, folks, do not, and now this is geared toward the Marxist, people in love with eugenics. You know, don't tell me, for example, that they were set up, or that the tapes were edited, like you had often said and always say. It's edited for brevity and relevance, but the full tape is intact and available for scrutiny. Mm-hmm. There's nothing edited for, that would change the...
Right, nothing was edited deceitfully to make it look like somebody was saying something out of context, or
exactly,
was all done.
And we've done this, you and I, Joe. You
take 8 hours of film.
Yeah.
You go to a court. Nobody's going to sit through the 8 hours of constant film.
We could barely do it.
You chop it down to the parts where there is action or relevant information.
Exactly.
And you submit both.
Right. So
I mean, they followed actual investigative standard operating procedure. Procedures in the way that they release the videos, releasing the cut and uncut versions of both.
You know, it is very much like, the way I look at this, it is so backward. This would be like, you know, filing intimidation charges against the voters in the Philadelphia precinct who were attempting to vote and who were intimidated by the Black Panthers, new Black mm-hmm. Panthers. Okay. That to me is what this is very much like. It's backwards. And yet people are swallowing this and they're rejoicing in this, when in fact this is one of the most hideous crimes. And I've got more to say on this. Because I got more to say on this, and then I'm sure Russ Dizdar has some things to say on this. But folks, I've got a lot to say on this later, and separately. I'm going to leave it at that. But you know, I would really ask everyone to pray for the people who are being targeted by this lawless investigation, by this lawless Justice Department, by this lawless governor, by this spiritually bankrupt. Political machine.
And interesting, you know, you say lawless. We see it across the board with the abortion, the eugenics movement. We see it here with the global warming movement. Can breaking the law be a legal defense? Two trials, environmental activists are using climate necessity as part of their defense. They could only defend the planet by breaking the law. Now, this is interesting because this has legal ramifications.
Yes.
This article from the Daily Beast says, when our grandchildren write history of our climate movement, they'll save a few pages for the trials of 2016. First, they'll focus on this Washington County, where last Friday a Seattle area jurors found so-called Delta 5 not guilty of obstruction for blocking a regional oil facility in 2014. The protest and the acquittal were notable as part of a growing wave of anti-oil, gas, and coal citizen action that has swept the country in the past few years. The courtroom was treated to a masterclass on why principal lawbreaking is just the tonic needed to cure our government's woeful inaction on warming. But what law students of the future will learn about Delta 5 trial is something a bit more arcane, if not no less monumentous. For the first time in the United States, a jury heard testimony that defendants' criminal actions were justified by climate necessity. The argument that it's better to break the law while getting in a few punches at the fossil fuel system than it is to sit back and lawfully watch the world burn, a defense that has been tried a handful of times in the U.S. but has never made it past a judge's bench slap. Now in New York, there's the Montrose Nine are facing trial for disorderly conduct after having shut down a construction site along a gas pipeline in Westchester County in 2015. The Daily Beast goes on to say that they're using the same type of defense, and this is the first time in less than 2 weeks that this to air the climate necessity defense in open court. So you have to understand, this is setting a precedent. This is much more than legal la-di-da, they say in the article. By slipping into otherwise mundane criminal proceedings, a heavy dose of serious discussion regarding our environmental caretakers and reams of scientific analysis of the crude oil, leaving one of many causes for consideration for climate activists who understand it's time to abandon carbon initiatives and, you know, start. It's done, time for business as usual to be over. And you can't sit back and let these things happen, is what they say. They're saying breaking the law is better than sitting back and doing nothing. And they're getting away with it being found by juries innocent. The first Delta 5 case now. This next case is in New York. We'll see.
Well, hold on. With 15 minutes left to the top of the hour, I just want to mention, folks, if you haven't done so already, go to AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. That's AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. Our partners in this radio endeavor, I got to tell you, they're having a fantastic sale. Again, AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com, fantastic sale, scratch and dent. While it lasts, you know, they are a Christian-owned, veteran-owned company, and boy, do they have some of the finest long-term storable foods. They've got a veterans outreach program. They, true Christians in every sense of the word. They've done, and they'll never tell you, but they've done so much for so many. They've helped so many people through their veterans outreach program, so many through their biblical, Bible drive, so much for, they've just done a lot. And this is a class A company. AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. That's AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. It is where Hagman & Hagman gets their long-term storable food. I just wanted to, again, a quarter to the hour, wanted to mention that. Joe, go ahead and continue, sir.
Well, in the this article, with this, they say that the, again, this is the first time that there has been able, that's even entered into a trial court where they've been able to use the breaking the law as a defense against a crime that they've committed, but it's now being done by the second time in less than 2 weeks as a climate necessity defense, they say. And they say by doing this, they're changing. They say it's a powerful sign that the casual destruction of the climate will no longer be met with compliance and silence, and that, as I said, it's giving activists, telling them it's better to break the law to stop this than it is to sit back and let it happen, that being man-made global warming. But the ability to bring in these defense, this defense, in two separate parts of the country, completely on the opposite sides, one in Seattle, one in New York State, near New York City and Westchester County, where they say in this article that it's a defense that has been tried a handful of times, but in the U.S. has never made it past a judge's bench slap. Now we have two cases in 2 weeks. One's already closed and they've been found innocent or acquitted, and the other one will be starting on February 3rd. This is a organized action, a judicial action, in my opinion, to see this happening twice in a matter of weeks for the first time in U.S. history, to try to set precedent, to change the way they're going to allow people to get away with things that they didn't before. And that's not people like you and me.
or those listening, you know. Time is short. War is coming. Time is short. War is coming. Civil unrest is coming. And if nothing else, for relevance, the DHS Insider postings from HomelandSecurityUS.com, HomelandSecurityUS.com, which is resurrected now as my site, predicted the insider that I was speaking to predicted this time. And I, you know what, Joe, I think I'm going to have to try to get a hold of him. I'm not sure if I can, but
well, it wouldn't hurt to try. Mentioning Hillary Clinton, there's been an update in the email investigation. The FBI is ready to indict Hillary Clinton, and if its recommendation isn't followed by the U.S. Attorney General, the agency investigators plan to blow the whistle and go public with their findings. Former House Majority Leader Tom DeLay tells Newsmax TV, "I have friends that are in the FBI, and they tell me that they are ready to indict," DeLay said Monday to the Steve Malzberg show. "They're ready to recommend an indictment, and they also say that if the Attorney General will not indict, they are going public. Clinton is under FBI investigation for her use of private server to conduct confidential government business while Secretary of State." And it goes on from there to talk about the case. And DeLay went on a radio show, a Texas Republican, DeLay, The Washington Times Radio host said, one way or another, either she's going to be indicted and that process will begin, or we try harder in the public eye with her campaign. One way or another, she's going to have to face these charges. And end of quote. So, I don't know.
Well, Joe, do you believe that Hillary Clinton, Huma Abedin, and Sid Blumenthal, perhaps, and others will be indicted for their actions with respect to the classified information, the mishandling of classified information? Petraeus, look, Petraeus is going to go down a rank, go down, I mean, it's going to cost him some bucks for what he did, his careless handling of the classified information. So my question is the Clinton criminal cabal going to be held to the same standard?
Well, interestingly enough, there's a few theories on this. One from Drudge himself of the Drudge Report, where there's another article talking about Hillary Clinton's health. And it's interesting that twice now I've seen where you see movement in the FBI investigation. And twice now there are headlines all throughout the mainstream media about Hillary Clinton's health. So the question is asked, will she be healthy enough to stand trial if indicted?
Well, okay, is that being floated out there to
I believe it is, yes. I believe it is. I don't think she'll be indicted, and if she is, it'll be a smoke and mirrors thing, and she'll walk off into the sunset without any PR. And who they'll bring in as a Democratic front runner in the presidential election, I don't know. Or she'll get the nomination, and this will be something that is swept under the rug.
The email.
I mean, who knows at this point?
if you watch it, going back to now midsummer, I'm going to say June-ish. Is that a word? Okay, if you go back to last summer, midsummer, when the revelations about the server being in another state, you know, of course in the closet, and then under the care of another company, and then Brian, I think it was Pagliano, and him being rewarded with a position in the State Department, you start looking at these, at the development of this case against her. It seems like it's almost trying to like herd a bunch of cats. If you've ever tried to get a bunch of cats, it's just a really strange case. Or you know, you're imagine a water balloon slicked with WD-40 trying to, you know, hold on to that. It seems like she's able to escape. Now, to me, that would involve, now I could be wrong, Joe, but I think that does involve some level of complicity at the level of, well, within the Justice Department and certainly at the executive branch, if not the legislative branch. Don't forget back in Watergate, of course, Hillary Diane Rodham was involved in, Hillary Diane Rodham Clinton was involved in the investigation of the Watergate tapes. And, of course, summarily fired because she was advocating doing some things that were neither ethical nor were they, within the rules of the investigative conduct. But, yet, right now, and also, we must not forget the Rose the Law Firm records. Remember those, found 3 years later in the closet in the, residence of the White House during the Clinton, Bill Clinton presidency. So all of this combined with all of this baggage. And again, you look at this Economist magazine and she's the only one on the front cover of all the presidential candidates. What do you make of that? Is that meaningless? You know, maybe it is meaningless. Maybe there's nothing here to this, but
we're going to find out,
you know, and okay. So what would happen? And I was talking to my wife about this, and let me ask you this, Joe, and Eric, you can chime in, and ladies and gentlemen, you can, you know, certainly let's just say this. Let's say there's no clear cut candidate for the Democratic nominee. And again, we're talking at the lower level here at the theater level. At the theatrical level, you know, with politics right and left, this is all, you know, a false paradigm anyway. But just for the sake of entertainment, as we would watch a football game, let's say that there's no clear-cut candidate for the Democratic nomination.
Okay.
Then what? What happens?
Well, I don't know that that's the case. We see Bernie Sanders has, from the latest polling numbers, a 22-point lead in the New Hampshire primary and is almost even in Iowa. And then what's Biden's status in this? Is he still running Does he still have his hat in the ring?
I think Biden has adopted a wait and see approach. And you know, there's, and I can't put my finger on this, but you've got Debbie Wasserman Schultz as the DNC chair, which she to me, in my view, she does not have the intellectual capacity to run the chess match that we see playing out before us. So who's actually running the DNC side of it? We know on the right hand side, or the so called conservative or Republican, I don't even say conservative because that doesn't exist, but the Republican side, you've got the influence of Karl Rove and other even the Koch brothers, for example, because money does buy influence. But there's somebody above Sanders and Clinton and I mean, there's somebody far above this on the Democratic side that's really moving the chess pieces around. But I don't believe Sanders has got a chance, because in the South he's not going to have any traction whatsoever. Anything below the Mason-Dixon line, Sanders is going to fall flat. He might look good in Keene, New Hampshire, where everyone drives a
socialist.
Subaru. Right. And Glenn Beck's remarks to Cruz about, you know.
You hear him say he would vote for Sanders over Trump.
That's exactly what I'm referring to. I understand where he's coming from, because it's like when you sit down, and if you've ever been, folks, if you've ever been to a prison and interviewed, convicts, you know, for example, when you're, if you go into Attica, in a room, you know the guy across from you. You know what he is. I mean, he's got a number across his chest. Okay, he's a murderer. You know he's a criminal. You know what you're getting there. So I understand what Glenn Beck meant. I think it's just an unfortunate way of framing it, but I understand what he meant. But that's kind of digressing from it. So what happens if there's no clear-cut delegate? You know, come June, July. What are we going to, I mean, what do you think would happen?
Oh, they're going to find somebody.
Or maybe Obama might change his mind and run for a third term. What do you think?
I've seen that. I've seen the possibility of Biden throwing his hat in the ring, or Obama becoming vice president on a ticket, or having Biden or a friend become the Democratic front runner in order to establish him in the UN as the Security Council General as Ban Ki-moon's term runs out.
It's Larry Nichols is talking about that, right?
It's either onto that or he'll. I don't know.
Larry Nichols is talking about Biden being the president because Hillary's damaged goods, and UN Obama going to the UN as head of the UN, of course. And I do believe that that's very possible, given the fact that if you look back in history, the Nobel laureate, for the Nobel Peace Prize, and his experience and his grandiose plan, standing in front of the, where he gave a speech in Berlin. Look at his conduct. So I could see him going to the UN, and we would have to contend with him at that level. So would it really matter who would be the Democratic, would it be if Biden? Sure. I mean, I could see them working together to bring about the global chaos, orchestrated chaos, and destruction.
Will it be a name that we haven't seen yet? Maybe you have the possibility now.
It be Hillary, though?
It's very possible. I guess a lot of it's going to depend on, can't she dig herself out of this hole that she's in, even getting to the nomination from the Democratic side, I guess, will be the challenge. She's up against now. It looked like she had a clear, smooth run all the way to the nomination. And what you say is correct. If she stays in the race, if she endures this email investigation, she'll outlast Sanders if there is a Democratic primary and she is a part of it and Sanders is on the other side. So it's very possible she could slip her way by default into that nomination. But anybody who's a strong Democrat can do the same. And why they are sticking with her,
man, I don't know.
Some say it's because she knows where the bodies are buried.
JK, I just want to say thank you. You hit the nail right on the head. And Louise, thank you. You might prefer to call Obama the abomination. You know, yeah, we call him the Renegade because that's a Secret Service code name. Renegade, of course, and, you know, by definition is a lawless one. And I think that has biblical overtones, and I think it's perhaps more appropriate. So Renegade in Chief is probably my choice.
Folks, listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report, after this break, we will be back with Bill Warner of PoliticalIslam.com. And after he's done in hour number two, Katie from Essential Oils will be with us. Stay with us on this Monday, January 25th, 2016. We'll be right back.
This is the Global Star Radio Network.